Real quick before we start the show, Pacific Bitcoin is going to be awesome. November 10th and 11th, Santa Monica, California. Do hope to see you there. You can go to pacificbitcoin.com to buy tickets. Use promo code CAFE for a discount. In the words of Michael Saylor, it is going to be the Bitcoin event of the year. VIP gets you into everything, including the VIP party as well as the VIP wrap party. Of course, GAA gets you all kinds of cool stuff as well, and there's going to be plenty of events and things to do. I hope to see you there. Hello and welcome to the Cafe Bitcoin Podcast, brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, the best way to buy and learn about Bitcoin. I'm your host, Alex Danzig, and we're excited to announce that we're bringing the Cafe Bitcoin conversation from Twitter Spaces to you on this show, the Cafe Bitcoin Podcast, Monday through Friday, every week. Join us as we speak to guests like Michael Saylor, Lynn Alden, Corey Clipston, Greg Foss, Tomer Strohlite, and many others in the Bitcoin space. Also, be sure to hit that subscribe button. Make sure you get notifications when we launch a new episode. You can join us live on Twitter Spaces Monday through Friday, starting at 7 a.m. Pacific and 10 a.m. Eastern every morning to become part of the conversation yourself. Thanks again. We look forward to bringing you the best Bitcoin content daily here on the Cafe Bitcoin Podcast.
There is a little bit of mudslinging occurring right now. And
I have noticed that.
Yeah, just a little bit. No, don't shit coin. It's bad for you.
Which casino is the wrong casino to gamble your money in? That's what they're. Each casino is pointing their finger at the other.
It's very interesting to see how susceptible these so-called stable coins are to people's opinions. And competitors, of course, dumping all of it.
Oh, are there stable coins that are destabilizing now? I'm aware that there are like exchange tokens that are destabilizing.
Yeah. But the
exchange tokens are literally the casino chips that these casinos make. And it's one thing when a casino, they have an unlimited number of casino chips. It's one thing when in the casino they're being used for something. But when if a casino kind of went out into the street and started trying to buy things with casino chips everywhere else, like bailing out other failed casinos with casino chips, you'd sense that something was wrong. And that's certainly what it feels like FTX has been trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Your spidey senses are tingling, Tomer.
Something seems like someone's trying to pass off nothing for something.
Hey, good morning. Isn't it amazing that they were able to convince, though, a bankruptcy court that they were a good enough company to buy Voyager, for example?
Maybe there was nobody else really showing up with anything. So it's like this guy's got a wheelbarrow full of chips, and that guy's got nothing, and nobody else has shown up. So that's the best offer. Wasn't that really the situation with Voyager?
There were multiple other offers. I'm not sure why FTX. I mean, FTX was the highest bidder, I believe, and they were using, I guess, you know, this false sense of solvency.
We'll see how it all plays out. We've seen this. We've seen a similar drama. This one may somehow play out differently, but we've seen a similar drama a few other times this year.
Isn't it funny how they kind of just roll around with these wheelbarrows full of shitcoin? And they offer the shitcoin to people. And people are like, yes, give me some shitcoin. They don't understand what it is they're being offered, but it sounds amazing, I guess, because they do get some traction, apparently, until it all blows up.
Well, it doesn't hurt to have guys like Jim Cramer out there talking about FTT token.
That wasn't actually Jim Cramer, I don't think.
Oh, it wasn't? God, it fooled me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When they're rolling around with these wheelbarrows full of incentives that they're provided to people, then people talk about the wheelbarrow full of the stuff because, they have incentives to do so.
So, Alex, are we and Jacob, are we all in the same building right now?
I think we are. Rooms? I'm doing this from my hotel room in Santa Monica.
100%, man. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll be seeing you very soon.
So maybe at some point we'll all step out and meet in the lobby and create all kinds of feedback by mistake.
But see, what this means is that we love all of you that much that we're here bright and early, 7 o'clock in the goddamn morning. I don't know what the hell's wrong with us. Pacific time to share the love with you guys.
Morning. I may not stay that long, but I
really do. And this episode 203 or whatever it is different than the other 202 because
I don't know. I'm just in a different time zone and I get to complain about it.
We could all be partying together. We could be eating breakfast
together. Yeah. Alex, welcome to starting Cafe Bitcoin 7 a.m. and not 9 a.m. or whatever it usually is for you, all comfortable somewhere towards the east.
Yeah, it's brutal. I get it, but I mean, you know, we got to kind of do what we got to do to make it good for as many plebs as possible. Good morning, Wicked. What's up, brother?
Morning. Did you guys see this headline that just dropped? It says that a U.S. attorney announces historic $3.36 billion worth of cryptocurrency seizure and conviction in connection with Silk Road dark web fraud. So the U.S. now has a shit ton of Bitcoin. So I don't know if they're going to keep it, but
is it Bitcoin or is it crypto? Like, what is it?
I think it's mostly Bitcoin.
It's probably just a hardware
Silk
wallet.
Silk Road was, I think, primarily dealing in Bitcoin, if I remember correctly. I don't remember them allowing you to pay anything else.
Because this was back in the day. I think it was before there were any shit coins, or it was extremely limited.
There were a few. Yeah. I mean, I think it was 2012, 2013, so there might have been like Litecoin and a couple others.
It was 2011, 2012 was Silk Road era. It got shut down in 2012. So most of the shitcoins didn't even exist yet at that time. But what's the, like, they found someone who was selling something at that time and they found their hardware wallet? Are there any details at all? Or it's,
yeah, is it a seed phrase or a hardware wallet?
That I'm not sure.
There were very few hardware wallets back then. I don't think there were any hardware wallets in that era, actually. So
they were all... Sorry,
it would just have been, you know, people ran Bitcoin Core to run Bitcoin, and they had .dat files that were password encrypted sometimes, and maybe not at others. But you know, if this is someone who has had 10 years since, they probably had moved their Bitcoin if it was in some insecure storage. So anything between then and now could be what's sad. But maybe you could share the article. I haven't seen it yet, and it's kind of interesting. Like $3.3 billion is a lot of Bitcoin.
Yeah, it is a lot. I mean, if you just look up, it's just, you know, Google DOJ Silk Road. And I think it's probably going to be the first article at the top of Google. Just wanted to correct you, Tom. Or the FBI shut down Silk Road in October 2013. So it was 2013.
Oh, gee. I was misinformed.
When they say seizure, I immediately suspect that they seized a computer. They seized something. When they say seizure, they do not mean they seized a seed phrase or they have some digital money. So I just really doubt that they actually have the Satoshis.
It's possible, but I mean, in my mind, I've always thought the government was going to get their Bitcoin this way by taking it from somebody. I kind of always assumed that's the way it was going to go. But Peter's right. Almost every single article I've ever seen where the government's like, we did this or we did that. I mean, you remember when they were, when the Canadian government, oh, it was Freeland, when she was like, yeah, we've banned all of these Bitcoin wallets. And it's like, you clearly don't understand how this works.
So I'm looking at the article now. It says that in November 2021, so last year, law enforcement seized over 50,676 Bitcoin hidden in the devices in defendant James Zong's home. So they have they have the devices, and Zong has pled guilty to unlawfully obtaining that Bitcoin from Silk Road. So I think they have the devices, and they probably have, you know, the wallet, the access to the wallet, I would assume.
That's a big haul, man. 3.7 yeah, billion. Man. Might be one of the biggest over 50, in history, you know?
50K Bitcoin, man. Well, China still has the most from, what's the one that they got theirs from? Was it OKCoin? Or I think they have like even more than that, but yeah, I mean, governments are starting to have a lot of Bitcoin.
You know what'll be interesting? In the past, they would auction it, right? They would sell it to the public. It's going to be curious to see when they reverse that policy. Instead of selling it, they're going to be like, "Yo, guys, we might want to hang on to this,
just in case it catches on.
Just in case."
I don't know the laws on that. Like, can they keep seized items, or do they have to, like, what is the law on all that?
Yeah, they can keep it. They can keep it. I mean, civil forfeiture is like a thing where
they don't auction off cash that they seize.
Here's the more interesting part about civil forfeiture is that the seizing agency gets to keep it. So, I mean, you know, If you're looking at the FBI, okay, let's, you know, if I'm the FBI or whatever agency, pick one, and I'm like, yo, we're living in this world where companies are more powerful than governments. You know, we're going to make our organization a very powerful organization, and we want to have, you know, ensure the organization's survival, et cetera. Like, you know, that there's a lot of incentives there.
You know what's interesting? I'm reading this too, and I'm not quite done. So, this guy, he wasn't someone who dealt on or bought, who sold or bought stuff on the Silk Road. He was a hacker who stole 50,000 coins from it because it was working on a slow computer, and he made some deposit and then managed to withdraw the deposit repeatedly before the records updated. So he stole like 51,000 Bitcoin from Silk Road, and then tried to hide it. And then it turns out, when the Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash hard fork came, he ended up with 51,000 BCH, and he subsequently dumped it. It looks like sometime around 2017 when BCH came out. So he ended up with 53,000 Bitcoin. I wouldn't be surprised if this is what allowed them to trace him. So if ever the statement that you closed the show with, Alex, was appropriate to any individual. This guy was sitting on $3 billion worth of Bitcoin, but to get another couple of thousand Bitcoin, he went to some foreign exchange and dumped all of his BCH rather than just ignore it. And that could have been, it doesn't say that was exactly the thing, but it may, you know, he certainly probably had to do a little bit of identification and ended up with a bunch more Bitcoin pointed towards him that could have been traced to, well, who had these 50,000 BCH. So, but this guy stole 50,000 Bitcoin, which at the time wasn't really that much money, but now it's $3.3 billion.
That's so mind blowing. Just yeah. All of it. Just the entire history of Bitcoin is so, how unlikely is all of this? It's just mind blowing. By the way, a couple of quick housekeeping things. Pacific Bitcoin is this week. This is episode, what are we on? 213? 213. 213 Pacific Bitcoin is now 3 days away. So the whole Swan team, well, probably 90%+ of the Swan team flew in recently. We're not going to tell you where because, yeah, we're all together. One bomb. The whole team. Where'd Swan go? That's a dark thought. Anyway. We're going to be doing this thing together a little bit later. So today's show is going to be a little shorter. We're going to be cutting it off at the 1 hour mark. But we'll be doing this all week. We're going to stay faithful to the peoples. The show times may be longer or shorter than usual, but we're going to come in here and check in with you guys every day. So today, normal time. Tomorrow, normal time. Wednesday, normal time. Thursday, Friday, I think we're starting at 9 a.m. Pacific. Is that right, Jacob?
Yeah, and those shows are going to be live. So they're just going to be recorded. We're going to be piping the audio in, into spaces with the macro strategy crew, and then on Friday with the Swan private macro crew. And then, yeah, so we'll just be having an audio only on Thursday and Friday because they'll be live. But then Monday of next week, we're rolling back to a normal schedule. Yeah.
Awesome. So we're going to be doing these live from the Swan Dome at Pacific Bitcoin. The show's going to be an hour versus 2 hours, and doing it live, piping it into the room. Go ahead, Wicked.
I just wanted to once again correct the record. I just looked it up, but the Chinese government seized 190,000 Bitcoin and 830,000 ETH from the Plus Token scam. So just wanted to put that out there. So the Chinese government has way more Bitcoin and ETH, but you know, whatever.
Peter, go.
I wanted to quote a little bit from this article that Wicked brought up. It's actually kind of funny. Instead of saying that the transparent ledger to Bitcoin allows for agencies to follow the money, they say once he was successful in his heist, he attempted to hide the spoils through a series of complex transactions, which he hoped would be enhanced as he hid behind a mystery of the darknet. IRS CI special agents are the best in the world at following the money through cyberspace or wherever our financial investigations lead us. It's idiots.
All right.
Well, if you're actually looking for what's funny in the article, let me see if I can find it. They found the Bitcoin hidden in a computer, hidden in a giant popcorn tin. It says,
is that for real?
They found some in an underground floor safe and on a single board computer that was submerged under blankets in a popcorn tin stored in a bathroom closet. So for any of you who are hiding your Bitcoin in a bathroom closet, in a popcorn tin, under blankets, on a single board computer, that's not going to cut it anymore.
It doesn't work.
Not as safe as it looks.
Tomer, what is a Cascais coin? Because they're claiming that that's physical Bitcoin.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Oh my God.
You don't know what that is, Peter?
I haven't heard of that in forever.
It's Mike's old coins.
These were really beautiful coins that someone made, like these very pretty coins made out of nice metal. And sealed them in. I think they were sealed in.
Weren't they like an actual one? Weren't they really a 1 ounce of real gold?
I thought some of them. There were
thousands of Bitcoin denominations. Some more.
Yeah, and they have a private key hidden inside of them, so they can. And there's a website that tracks how many have been. Because if you never spend it, then you can see like the public address of every one of these coins was made public, so you can see if it's moved. Or if it hasn't, so some of them where the bitcoins that were stored within them have been spent are just the metal token and the commemorative thing. Others that still have the Bitcoin inside of them and have never been spent exist. And there were early collectors. This was before my time, but there were early collectors who bought a bunch of these things because you know that was then what putting $1,000 into Bitcoin was. You got a gold coin with 1,000 Bitcoin on it. At the time, because 1,000 Bitcoin just wasn't worth that much. It was worth maybe $1,000 or something. So this guy is only 32 years old now, 10 years after. So he was in his early 20s at the time. These are all allegations, of course, but he has pled guilty and he's been working with them. So there's quite a bit of interesting news in this, but I think the biggest takeaway is, that there will almost certainly be a completion of a seizure of about 51,000 to 53,000 Bitcoin as a result of this, which who knows what the U.S. government will do with when, but it's seizure, in their possession now.
And seizure is a misnomer here because it does say Zhang voluntarily surrendered 1,004 additional Bitcoin. So this guy surrendered it. They didn't seize it. Bitcoin is still unconfiscatable. Phew.
Yeah, and the government made Mike stop making those coins, by the way, just to wrap that in a bow for the people who don't know.
Yep.
You know, that's actually a good thing that Peter just pointed out. Sometimes I forget that it's just people just know it's obvious that when they say they're seizing it without the cooperation of a human being, that's not actually possible, right? So yeah, it's one of those things. It's a good thing to remember and point out.
Oh, and they got him on wire fraud, by the way. Go imagine.
Well, he stole the money electronically, so it is. But it gives credibility. It says that stealing Bitcoin over the internet is a form of wire fraud. It acknowledges whatever is in the wire fraud laws as applying to Bitcoin.
Everything is in the wire fraud. Between wire fraud and what's the other one? When they get you on organized crime. What the heck? I forget the name of that one. There's two. There's the tax fraud, wire fraud, and that one other one. They're like encompass almost everything.
Racketeering?
Thank you. Yes, racketeering.
That RICO?
Now, we're all in Los Angeles, and this is coming from the Los Angeles field office of the IRS.
You guys should walk in there and ask to see the Bitcoin.
Okay, Peter. We'll meet you there, actually.
Wouldn't that be funny, though? Somebody walked in and said, I'd like to see the Bitcoin, please.
Wicked.
I'm trying to look it up. I can't remember how many of the 1,000 BTC denominated Cassian coins were made. It was only a handful. Like it was probably less than 10. But I thought it was kind of interesting. It's that coin is now officially the most valuable physical coin ever. So I thought that was kind of an interesting.
Wow.
Fact,
really,
you know, because it's at least at the peak, it was worth, you know, 48 or more. It was worth $69 million, right? So there's no other coin worth that much for a single coin.
They don't discuss that kind of value in the article. They just say that there are 25 Cassius coins with an approximate value of 174 Bitcoin.
You know what's funny about that? I remember when these things came out, and I was working in gold at the time, and I remember all the gold bugs making fun of it. They're like, see, look, Bitcoin has to copy gold for it to have any relevance. It's like the most valuable coin in the history of mankind. What the fuck? Things have changed.
Well, and the funny thing is, like, the ones that haven't been claimed are probably lost or just in a drawer somewhere, forgotten, like, you know.
Maybe.
Like, I mean, I don't know, man. I would anyone sitting on a 48 million, well, not 48 now, $20 million single coin just like sitting there, I don't know, I would not be comfortable with that kind of, you know, money on just a single coin, right?
That's in a popcorn tin buried under some blankets.
You know, this blankets is another, in the bathroom closet.
This is really another kind of interesting story, but like the guy stole what he thought was $100,000 worth of Bitcoin at the time. It was probably $2, maybe it was $1 million that he thought he got away with on a heist, and he hid his money, and he suddenly became a thief who stole $3.3 billion. And can you imagine, you know, it's one thing if you've stolen $1 million in this world, that people might keep an eye on you for something 10, 12 years later. But when you're sitting on $3.3 billion in stolen assets, the world's eyes are still on you, as this case evidences. Can you imagine the anxiety? Like, I don't know, but I'm just the anxiety and fear that this guy must have felt the whole time. How was he ever going to spend his $3.3 billion? Like, it's an unspendable, it's such a huge sum of money. It's unspendable. And so
it looks, I don't know, Tomer. He was afraid enough to put it in a popcorn tin in his bathroom closet under some blankets.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Right. I'm saying he was pretty scared, right? He didn't burn them and get rid of them and destroy his trace to it. In fact, he he did this silly thing of, you know, trying to sell all the BCH and then ending up with BTC, like he didn't have enough. So I don't know what this guy's psychology was, but I'm actually really interested in what it must be like to suddenly be sitting on this growing pile of wealth that you've stolen. I think it just makes for a pretty fascinating story of likely tremendous anxiety.
Yeah. Okay. Something that's, I think is probably valuable to point out here is that you don't know, people don't know, like, who imagined Bitcoin would be what it's worth today, let alone at the last peak, let alone where it's going to go, right? It's not too late, guys. 100 million Satoshis per Bitcoin. You can currently buy 4,831 Satoshis for one United States dollar. There are no excuses. Go buy $20 worth of Bitcoin and then keep doing it over and over and over again. All right, wicked, go. And then there's a couple items I think we should get today. Shorter show than usual. Go ahead, wicked.
I forgot what I was going to say, so I put my hand down.
Okay. One other really important thing to point out. The $3.3 billion is what those Bitcoin were worth apparently like last November at the time of seizure, because I'm just doing the math in my head. 50,000 Bitcoin times today's price is still $1 billion. But it would have been $3 billion if I'm just rounding off the numbers. But if it was times 70,000 times 53,000, you get to that $3.3 billion. So they're not for people who are worried, oh my God, is someone about to dump $3.3 billion worth of Bitcoin? It's a little over a billion that is what that's worth right now.
Only a billion. No worries.
Only a billion. $1 billion. What's a billion dollars? We print more than that every time one of us opens our mouth here.
Just going to check the liquidity real quick.
There's a game theory question I want to dig into here. And you're seeing what's happening with the meltdown between SBF and CZ, right? Where everybody's best buddies, right? When things are good, it's when you're in a nuclear winter, according to Fred Thiel, a nuclear crypto winner. And things start going a little bit sideways. Maybe those things change a little bit, right? So, this thing with CZ goes, as part of Binance's exit from FTX equity last year, Binance received roughly 2.1 billion USD equivalent of BUSD and FTT, FTT being their casino token, whatever. And they're basically like, yeah, we're done. We're selling this, right? So it's created this really interesting series of events. Odell's like, hey, yeah, Binance is dumping a massive amount of FTT on the market. SBF, his exchange, FTX, and his trading arm, Alameda, seem to have the majority of their money locked in leveraged FTT. That's probably not good. And then SBF comes out and he says, oh, okay, you want to play this game? Do you know how many BNB we have? What happens if we throw it all in the markets right now? I've always respected you, CZ, but it's time to end it. Like, this is like a feud happening in public between some of the largest exchanges in the world. Now, as interesting as that is, what happens when sovereigns start figuring out the game theory around how all of this stuff works? Here's another interesting article. Think about this for a second. Central bank digital currencies could require...
Alex, please, hold up. That's a fake account you just quoted. Read the name.
Is it?
Read the name.
Which part?
The one claiming to be Sam Bankman-Fried. Read the name.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. So retract the thing I said about the, oh, okay, you want to play this game. I don't know why that was in my notes this morning. I'm looking at you, Mr. Researcher. I'm not going to say any names. anyway.
It's nuclear winter up here now.
It's still, like, in general, the story remains the same, right? Meaning they're going at each other, right? All right, let's carry it forward a minute. Thanks for correcting me, by the way. All right. Central bank digital currencies could require a network of international deals to stop state-backed money from infringing on other countries' sovereignty, European Union Commissioner Paolo Gentiloni said on Monday. All right, what's the point of that? Well, you know, when everybody's playing nice in the same system, everybody's best friends. But when things start coming apart at the seams, all that kind of stuff changes. So how does the game theory play out amongst sovereigns when they're all like, you know, pointing the finger at each other and currencies are exploding around the world and the dollar milkshake thing is going on and it's just like a complete Charlie Foxtrot?
They're going to do exactly what China and Russia have done. The first thing they're going to turn to is they're going to start amassing gold because they do not understand Bitcoin. Bitcoin is going to be the last thing that they acquire, and it's going to be the first thing that the country that is going to win this game acquires, and they're going to do it by either printing fiat and purchasing Bitcoin, or they're going to do it by selling U.S. treasuries and purchasing Bitcoin.
Any other thoughts on game theory? Like, what happens when the money stops working that everybody's using? What do you do?
It's a deep question. we're either going to get to do this the easy way, which is everyone realizes that we need a sound money, a bearer instrument that people can use freely, or the powers that be are going to go down putting up a really big fight, and it'll be the hard way. And I guess there's various degrees of making it easy or hard. But I want to hear from Greg.
Greg Foss, good morning.
Hi, guys. Good morning. I'm in Las Vegas, so hopefully my connection is cool. But so everything always revolves around risk management, whether you're at a corporate level or a government level or an individual level, right? And you have game theory or prisoner's dilemma. These are all well-studied but hard to predict outcomes. And I guess what I would say is the following. Always categorize the size of the position for the moment. And I'll start from the bottom. So right now you guys were talking about the Silk Road seizure. I imagine I came in a little late, but if that's $1 billion worth of Bitcoin, like Tomer says, don't overthink stuff, guys. That's 1/400th of the value of Bitcoin market cap right now. And then move up this spectrum a little bit to Sam Bankman-Fried. You know, he's got a portfolio value at Alameda of $14 billion, if you believe their marks, which I don't believe their marks. And they are defending their mark on FTT with all their ability, but it's still a rounding error. Like, it really is. Like, $14 billion across a bunch of shit coins, including Solana. Matters for those coins, but it does not matter for Bitcoin. And incidentally, I wouldn't be surprised if SBF and Alameda are actually short Bitcoin, because you're always short the most liquid unit in a hedge fund, much like everybody is always short the SPX index against long positions in individual stocks. It's called being hedged and wedged, okay? You actually don't want to be short the SPX because it's the most liquid benchmark, but you are short it because you have to be able to go to your unit holders and say, look, I'm delta neutral. That's what a hedge fund being hedged and wedged is, and don't think that Alameda is any different. And then we get to the big levels. These are governments and what they will do. Well, we already see one pretty smart government doing it. Why do we have to look anywhere else? Look at the results that are happening in El Salvador. I mean, I'm just over the moon with their results. Plus 10% growth to top line revenues. If that was a company, you'd be celebrating high fives all around, but that's actually bigger. It's a country. They put $2.8 billion. Now, This is 2.8 billion in a country of 6 million people. These are big numbers for a small country. It's a small number for a big ecosystem, but big numbers for a small country. So always put things relative to the size of the markets or the thesis that you're trying to compare it to. Central America is doing it. We know there will be another country that announces a Bitcoin, I'm not going to say standard, like El Salvador, but the number of countries that are studying it make it highly likely that another country will embrace it. Africa and what Obi is doing over in Africa, all of these things add up so that Bitcoin has 106 million users globally. It would be the 14th largest country in the world with 106 million people if Bitcoin community was a country. So all of these things I try and put to throw out to you guys to understand how to weigh the different metrics. You know, things sound big until you compare it. $1 billion of Bitcoin. Come on, guys. 1/400th of the size of the market. Like, don't worry about shit like that. Focus on the donut, not on the hole. We'll get there. Over to you.
Just a quick assessment of what you were saying, Greg, for people that's practical for people is get your coins off of some of these exchanges, especially the ones that are at war with each other.
It's fun to watch, Tomer. It's fun to watch because all it is like, you know, when I used to trade on the street versus being at a hedge fund, you used to watch Goldman Sachs line up against Morgan Stanley on the screens with $1 billion. It sounds like a big number now, but it was written, or doesn't sound like it was, but it was really big. And the two would go at each other on 30-year treasuries. Okay. And they'd have a bid for $1 billion and the other guy would have an offer for $1 billion. And you just see these two gorillas lining up against each other. And it would be fun to watch. It's good entertainment. But it really, even then, did not matter. It was two guys trying to line, or ladies trying to draw a line in the sand.
Yeah.
CZ is actually, you know, the funny thing is, it wasn't the trader at Alameda. She goes out, Caroline, something says, well, if you really want to sell it to me, we're bid for your whole lot. Well, why say that on Twitter? Why don't you just call up on the phone, like two big boys, and say, I have a bid for your entire piece. Oh, guess what? Maybe they don't have the liquidity to bid for the entire piece. So many games, so many childish,
many games.
Yeah. Wow. So
one other thing, I mean, I'm not an expert in Binance coin or FTT coin, but it just, to me, it's like, I don't even know if you can take these things off the exchange, or if you do, if it really matters, because there's only one person running both of these coins, each of them separate. There's two people, one running each of these coins on their own at the end of the day. So if you've got some money tied up in that and these things turn out to be, and the market turns out to value them at like Terra valuations, which is nil, like, there's nothing that you can do to protect yourself other than get out of them as well. Even though they're bleeding right now, they might bleed a lot more. Again, I'm not really an expert in these things, but they just seem, these are wholly owned casino chips of a couple of casinos. They're not decentralized, nor do they pretend to be in any way, shape, or form. And so if these things are failing, there's no way to preserve your value. Whereas if these exchanges owe you Bitcoin because you have a credit balance of Bitcoin on them, you can take your Bitcoin into your self-custody. You can move it somewhere that if these guys become insolvent, then you can just watch the entertaining show rather than be sucked up inside of it.
My comment is, I actually wanted to say this before we went on to this this subject. It was an umbrage to something that Alex had said a little earlier, but it dovetails nicely into what Greg said. And you know, Alex said, hey, you know, buy $20 worth of Bitcoin and then, you know, keep doing that. I take umbrage with that. I say, look at the total net worth of your portfolio, of what you are worth as an individual, and purchase 1-5% of that in Bitcoin. And do it now, because Bitcoin is is incredibly cheap right now. It is insurance. It is so many things that is available to you currently, and it is risk mitigation. Think about it. Think about how most people in this audience, or many people in this audience, have a portfolio that includes 40% bonds. And we know what Greg has to say about bonds. I'm not trying to trigger him. But talk about a volatile asset. Talk about risk inside of your portfolio. People look at Bitcoin, they say, oh, well, it's risky. As Greg said, what is 1%, 1 to 5% of your portfolio? What is that? It really is not a huge portion of your wealth. And believe it or not, if you're investing any of your portfolio in the stock market, in bonds, in real estate, you're already taking on risk. This is especially in your stock portfolio, I guarantee you that there are equities in there that are probably riskier than Bitcoin is. So I just want to say 1 to 5% of your portfolio, of your net worth, should be in Bitcoin. And personally, I would do it now.
Yeah, the do it now thing, I think, is becoming urgent.
So can I add to that? I appreciate that shout out. Now, I got to be clear. I mean, I was negative on bonds when yields were 300 basis points lower than they are now. And I'm not saying I'm positive on bonds, but I want to use this opportunity to say there is always a price, people. Don't say there's never a price that you would invest in something. And I've got in trouble on Pubby and Anders's excellent podcast for stating a price that I would do a deplorable act for a sum of money. And I have my price. The point is.
This sounds like I missed something really good.
I've always said it, and I'll talk to you in private about it, because I ask people not to post it on the Bird app, and 27 of them posted it on the Bird app because they thought it was funny. It's a point that you always have to have a price, okay? And sometimes that price is zero, but I'll take everything at zero. You know, there were people that I used to deal with that wouldn't buy a junk bond at a price of zero because they had to report to their investment policy committee that they owned a junk bond. Imagine how stupid that investment policy committee was. That is a fact. There's a lot of people out there right now that would not buy Bitcoin at zero because they would have to report to their investment policy committee that they owned Bitcoin. Like, this is how ridiculous people are with risk and managing money. Remember that Bitcoin is the best asymmetric upside return I have ever seen. Now, it doesn't mean I'm right. I'm just putting it in the context. And here is the truth. Bitcoin is far less risky than probably 400 out of the 500 stocks in the S&P 500. But people measure risk in different ways. Remember this, if you measure risk as volatility, Bitcoin is now less volatile than both the NASDAQ and the S&P 500. I don't tend to measure risk straight up as vol, but many people use value at risk or their VAR applications, which is a volatility measurement, as their risk metrics. Just remember, people, there's always a price, especially when you are dealing with asymmetry to the upside. And that's why 2%, 5% in Bitcoin, if it goes up 100-fold, which I think it will, is a life-changing and generational wealth-creating opportunity. And if it goes to zero, which I don't think it will, but certainly that's a possibility, you've lost 2%. I'm pretty certain just about everything else in the world will have lost a whole lot more of your portfolio than 2%, okay? So remember, there's a price for everything. Position sizing is imperative, especially in markets like we are right now. Don't get too far over your skis. This is the Risk Management 101 guy signing off. I'll stay on mute, but I plead with you, understand the difference between risk and volatility. Okay, understand the difference between asymmetric upside potential and asymmetric downside potential. Thanks.
All right. By the way, we're going to be doing live macro strategy with the boys, Foss, Jeff Ross, Lawrence Lepard, James Lavish, live from Swan Dome, starting at 9 a.m. Pacific. So don't miss that. We're going to do some announcements real quick. We'll keep rolling. You're listening to Cafe Bitcoin. Good morning and welcome. If you've never been here before, we do talk about Bitcoin, the place for your morning news. Preferred hangout for some of the smartest minds in the industry. Just chill, talk about what's going on. Also, a podcast on Fountain, Spotify, and Apple. You can throw me or Swan Bitcoin a follow to be notified of when those drop. Pacific Bitcoin is 3 days away. 3 days. It's not too late. You can still get here. You can still get here. PacificBitcoin.com, promo code CAFE for a discount. By the way, VIP is all sold out. But you can still get a GA ticket. This is going to be awesome. You guys should be here. We're going to, I mean, last night we all went out to dinner. A bunch of the Swans did. Not we all, but a bunch of us did. And it was a lot of fun. Going to miss all you guys that aren't going to make it. You should come. You really should.
Was Terrence there? Because he's not here this morning.
Yeah, he was there.
I'm just saying.
Where are you, Terrence? Yeah, it's a good. That's a good point. All right. There's two more topics I want to hit before we end the show. We're only going for an hour today, so we've got about 15 minutes left. So there was a really interesting thing that was pointed out on CNBC, and this was Mackenzie Sigalos did an article. And the headline is, "In Bankrupt Lebanon, Locals Mine Bitcoin and Buy Groceries with Tether." So basically $1 for them is now worth 15 cents, meaning they've lost, I guess, what would that be, 85% of their purchasing power? Further in the article, it says...
Mm-hmm. She's often in this space, isn't she?
Often, yeah. I see her a lot. As hyperinflation grips Lebanon, banks force huge haircuts on dollar withdrawals.
Alex, quick question.
Yep, go ahead.
That 85% of purchasing power they've lost, that would be in their local currency, right? Just because it doesn't really clearly state. That's how
no, it
supposed
doesn't,
to understand
it, yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm assuming that means in... She's using U.S. dollars so that we can understand, you know, unit of account-wise, so we can draw kind of a comparison. But I think what she's trying to say here is that it's lost 85% of its purchasing power, and that would be in the local currency.
That's a great article, Alex. She did a great job on that CNBC, and she does put out some really solid stuff. So cheers to her research. It's nice to see.
She's in here listening to the truth, Greg.
Something that's super interesting to me about it, though, is just look at the behavior of the humans. So that's always the fascinating thing to me, right? There's that old saying, watch what they do, right? Not what they say, watch what they do. And the human behavior in this case, as the currency is collapsing, is they're saving in the Bitcoin and they're using the stablecoin to spend. So that's Gresham's law, like in your face right there. Their own currency is collapsing. So in order to save any value, they're doing it in the thing that's in their view. And this is just humans figuring this out, right? In their view, is going to retain the most value. What are they spending? The thing that they think won't retain as much value as the thing they're saving in. That's fascinating to me.
Alex, I want to say I couldn't agree more. But I do want to highlight that most people misunderstand Gresham's law because they say that no. People will use the worst currency first, and that will crowd out the good currency. And then they think that means the worst currency gets to be continued to spend. But what you're saying, there's an excellent example on the fact that first they get rid of the worst one, which is the Lebanese local currency, right? Now they don't use that anymore. Then the worst one they have now is Tether. They're using that. They're going to be burning through that. And then in the end, it'll be Bitcoin taking over, right? So mm-hmm. People looking at Gresham's law often misunderstand that it moves towards the strongest money, which is what we're seeing there. A wonderful example. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, you get rid of the garbage first. And here's the fascinating part to me about it is, what is Tether supposed to be basically? It's supposed to be a US dollar stable coin. So what does that represent? That represents the value of the United States dollar. Hello? That is mind-blowing. And again, it's not, listen to what they say, watch what they do. What are they doing over there? That's what the humans are doing. That's amazing. So regardless of what, like, theories, you know, economists or central bankers have about what people should be doing or will be doing, that's what they are doing right now. And that is amazing. Go ahead, Wicked.
I think the other thing important to, you know, think about with Gresham's law is when you have rails to get on and off between your shitty currency and Bitcoin, and those rails get, you know, cheaper and cheaper and easier to use, I think you actually start to transition more to Thier's law, where you end up holding nothing in the shitty currency because it just doesn't make sense. And I think in the case of Lebanon, I'm assuming that their onboarding rails from their shitty currency to Bitcoin are probably not very efficient, right? There's not, I'm assuming there's not too many people who are willing to take the Lebanese currency for Bitcoin, or if they are, you know, there's probably some fairly large premium. But in the case of like dollars to Bitcoin, it's super, super easy, right, to get Bitcoin for dollars, and the cost to do so is becoming cheaper and cheaper, right? I mean, a lot of us use Strike, for example, and that has, you know, almost like the lowest fee and slippage of any exchange thus far, right? So I don't know, at a certain point, like, it really just doesn't make sense to hold dollars. I mean, if a merchant only accepts dollars in the future and you only have Bitcoin, transferring, you know, a little bit into dollars will be nearly free, and so there's no reason to hold dollars. And I think people are kind of, you know, they reach this conclusion at their own speed. Some of us have already reached this conclusion, you know, now that we have exchanges like Strike that make it that easy to do. But I think everyone else will reach the same conclusion just with time.
Yeah. You know, it seems kind of quaint how it all started for most of us. When you FOMO in for number go up, you know, this is great. This is Bitcoin, number go up. But man, the last couple of years, what have we seen? Sense of failure of every central bank, a future that looks at hyperinflation, which Bitcoin can solve. We're looking at CBDCs, which Bitcoin can solve. We're looking at supply issues, which Bitcoin can solve. Every time you turn around, man, there's just another use case. And I'm looking down the road saying, man, pretty soon I'll be limited. You get a pound of steak a month. Well, guess what? There's going to be a black market, I'm guaranteeing, that's going to arise for all of this. All those things that are shortages, there's going to be someone that can supply it. And guess what? They're not going to want dollars. They're going to want Bitcoin. They want something outside the system, something that is at that time relatively stable in a world of hyperinflation. So yeah, when you talk, someone said earlier that 1% to 5%, absolutely. It's a no-brainer, 1% to 5%. And guess what? As you hold it long enough, guess what? That 1% to 5% of your portfolio, before you know it, is 30, 40, 50% of your portfolio. What's up, Fossey? Good to see you, man.
And then in these kind of things that you're describing, this happens every time, right? Whenever there's a currency collapse, there's always NATO mutiny. There's always this kind of activity. There's black markets that pop up. There's people are like, well, you know, you'll never be able to do this, never be able to do that. And there's always like ways around, although it can become incredibly difficult. And the other thing is that what are the premiums? You know, you want to buy toilet paper? Bitcoin. You want to buy whatever, coffee? It's going to cost you Bitcoin. Oh, you want some cigarettes? Bitcoin. Like anything. Give me the Bitcoin. Don't give me the crappy US dollars or whatever the hell it is that people are trying to dump and get rid of. Like in every currency collapse in history, they're trying to dump and get rid of the currency that's losing value. And the interesting part about that, it's a human behavior thing and it's a feedback loop. Once human beings figure that out and they start running for the exits. So imagine you're in a movie theater, right? And like, you're all just watching this movie, and all of a sudden this one dude gets up and he's like bolting for the exit. And everybody's like looking at him like, what the hell? The next thing you know, another dude bolts for the exit. And pretty soon people are like, whoa, what's going on here? I mean, if you look at nature and how schools of fish and flocks of birds and stuff like that behave, same kind of thing. They're all signaling to each other. So that's a fascinating thing. The last thing I want to point out here before I go to you, Greg, and then we're going to move to wrap, is this last little thing here. In CryptoGlobe.com, BitMEX co-founder says CBDCs could take away the ability to buy Bitcoin. I don't know if they'll take it away. They'll definitely make it harder, but this is the point I'd like you all to consider if you're listening to this. If you're new to Bitcoin and you're like, a lot of these guys, you know, they say a bunch of stuff that sounds kind of out there. You know, it's in the yay zone. It's in that zone where people are like, I'm not so sure about that. I'm just going to read what he said. I'm also optimistic because today I still have the ability to buy the supreme antidote, Bitcoin. This window will not last forever. Capital controls are coming. And when all money is digital and certain transactions are not allowed, the ability to purchase Bitcoin will quickly vanish. If any of this doom porn resonates with you and you don't own at least a very small amount of Bitcoin, the best day to have bought Bitcoin was yesterday. So again, you may not agree with everything we say here. Maybe 99% of what we say here is completely nonsense. Maybe. But what if 1% of it is right? Maybe you should have some Bitcoin. I'm gonna go to Greg, and then we're going to move to wrap.
Thanks, guys. Really quickly here. What Pubby said about stakes and game theory about stakes, think about game theory and countries selling oil. And that's what I've always said. There will be a country that prices oil and natural gas in Bitcoin. Why? They don't want fiat dollars for their valuable natural resource energy. So you can move game theory all up and down the spectrum of size and space and individuals, corporations, all the way up to governments. And then finally, that comment on CBDCs, that assumes every single country in the world bans Bitcoin. What about the countries that embrace Bitcoin? There'll be winners and losers. Don't overthink shit, people. Everybody always overthinks. Focus on the donut, not on the hole. See you guys this week. I'm looking forward to it.
Likewise. It's going to be a lot of fun. Go ahead, Ian.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's funny that you guys are assuming that we'll be able to get a pound of beef. It's going to be a pound of cricket flour.
That's not nice. All right. Hopefully,
typical that the ant besmirches the crickets.
He didn't like crickets. I don't know. It's an ant thing, maybe. But anyway, all right. So that's pretty much a wrap. We're going to end it here. You've been listening to Cafe Bitcoin. We do this every day, Monday through Friday, typically start at 7 a.m. Pacific, roll for 2 hours, talk about all things Bitcoin. Great place for your morning. It's a great place to learn about Bitcoin, preferred hangout for some of the smartest minds in the space. Also a podcast up on Fountain, Spotify, Apple. You can throw me or Swan a follow to be notified of when those pods drop. If you boost us on Fountain, we will give you a shout out during the show. Thanks to the sponsor of this show, Swan Bitcoin, my crew, and Shane Sats for Life, producer Jacob. I'm your host, Alex Danzik. I work with Swan Bitcoin. If you want to know more about Swan, shoot me a DM. I'm happy to help you. Thanks again to the speakers. As usual, appreciate all you guys and gals and awesome people out there who come on this show and teach people about the bright orange future. There's going to be a lot of that going on this week at Pacific Bitcoin. It's going to be great. Let's go, guys. Get on the mission. If you don't know what that means, hang out. You'll figure it out. Love all you guys. Everybody have a great day today, and we will see you tomorrow. Crush it.